Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
We've got more work to do on their behalf. Not only to reclaim all the jobs that were lost during the recession, but also to reclaim the kind of financial security that too many Americans have felt was slipping away from them for too long.
That's President Barack Obama responding to the 163,000 payroll jobs that were added in the month of July, according to the Labor Department. Those numbers came out today. Now, that, you know, that was compared to 64,000 in June, but it still didn't do anything with the unemployment rate. Just the unemployment rate went from 8.2 to 8.3%. That's how the president responded. This is how Mitt Romney responded.
This is an extraordinary record of failure. The president's policies have not worked because he thinks government makes America work. He's wrong.
Well, I mean, you can tell the interpretation, the spin on this is going to be used by the gubernatorial candidate from the Republican side of the aisle to his best benefit. And obviously the president's going to try to put his best spin on this. But, like, you know, here's the deal. The deal is that there are 163,000 jobs in July. It's somewhat mediocre, but significantly improving over what was in June. And I don't think that the Labor Department was expecting or economists were expecting that high a number. But still, even with the number, like I said, the unemployment rate went from 8.2% to 8.3%. One of the things that struck me, and I was reading several articles on this, and this, there was a statement made by Alan Krueger, who's the chairman of the President's Council on Economic Advisers. And basically what he said was that, you know, we're going to continue to dig our way out of this hole that was caused by the severe recession beginning in 2007. And I had to laugh at that because only for one reason, and that is that you hardly ever see or hear subtlety during a campaign year, and that was pretty subtle. I spoke earlier today with Patrick Rice, who's an economics reporter for Politico, and I asked him about that subtlety.
Well, I think that's been the Obama administration's message sort of throughout the economic turmoil, is that this is a mess they inherited rather than one they created, and certainly one that they're going to be pushing hard between now and November.
So what do you think the Fed, because I think the anticipation is that we're going to be looking for some more stimulus from the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, I don't think today's number sways that one way or the other. It certainly wasn't low enough to trigger panic that we're headed back into a recession. It certainly wasn't high enough to convince everything that everything's fine, particularly not the, you know, the 5 million plus people who've been unemployed for more than 6 months straight. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this sways the Fed. But, you know, my sense is that today's report won't be a defining factor either way.
So what would be the defining factor, in your opinion? I mean, where do we have to get to before some additional action is taken then?
Well, I don't think the Fed looks at, you know, sort of one specific data point. I don't think there's a magic number of jobs, you know, over or under that would tip their decision. They look at a lot of different indicators. And the important thing to remember is that the Fed has a dual mandate. It's not only their job to bring us as close to full employment as possible. They're also supposed to control inflation. You know, inflation is minimal right now, and you know, there are several sort of investment indicators that suggest it's going to stay low for a long time. But they always have sort of one eye on employment, and then, you know, they're keeping the other eye on inflation and trying to make sure that over the long haul they're not setting us up for what's called an inflationary spiral.
Well, there are other factors that are going to be at play here in terms of what you refer to as the inflationary spiral, and I'll particularly point to the drought in much of the United States and how that is going to impact prices just up and down the consumer line. How do you gauge, you know, what is at fault by the economy and what is at fault, you know, with measures that are beyond our control, like the drought?
Well, I think if someone had that line, first of all, they'd be an extremely rich investor. And second of all, they'd probably be the most sought-after economist in the country. You know, I think it's very difficult to sort of tease those two things out. I do think it's important to remember that inflation is minimal right now, because even though the Fed has been taking steps to sort of expand the amount of money out there, the money that the Fed is giving to banks in the hope that they're lending isn't all getting lent out. You know, there's this huge pool that what's known as excess reserve just sort of waiting And so far, people aren't able to borrow them or have decided not to out of lack of confidence that they can turn it into a profit.
See, and one of the other things that's puzzling is you keep hearing, I mean, you get some of the earnings reports from the major corporations and, you know, the department stores and supermarkets, you know, and the consumers out there spending a little bit more money than the consumer had been spending before. And yet there is this huge reluctance to kind of open the door a little bit wider and begin bringing people in to respond to what otherwise might look as kind of a, you know, some momentum in the economy. In terms of jobs.
You know, investing isn't part of a psychological question. You know, I think people are a little skittish. You know, we've been through sort of a shock to the system for younger people. You know, that they grew up in the 90s, which was an economic boom, and then, you know, they came out into the labor force in an economy that nothing about their youth had prepared them for. And I think that's sort of made people skittish, and it might scare off some investors from investing. I think the other piece is there's sort of a looming uncertainty about what federal policy is going to be on taxes and spending. You know, Democrats and Republicans are at an impasse over what's known as the fiscal cliff, which if we were to go over, it would mean an increase in taxes and a contraction of government spending. And so if you're looking at decisions to invest and you have this event on the horizon that could, you know, sort of spark a recession, you may be a little hesitant to sort of put your chips in the middle of the table knowing that, you know, there's a pretty bad hand that could be played.
And one of the other things that feels somewhat dismal, somewhat cynical, and I'm sure accurate, is that these numbers that came out with jobs growth, it's pretty much assumed that this is probably about as good as it's going to get. We're not going to see, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 jobs added in the month of July or August or September. We're pretty much stagnating at a level that really continues to keep the unemployment rate either, you know, ticking up a little or ticking down a little.
Well, I think that reflects a lot of underlying conditions. You know, it shouldn't be forgotten that that's, you know, one of the factors that got us into this mess was a housing bubble. And a bubble doesn't reflect real growth. It reflects sort of irrational confidence and what ultimately turn out to be bad bets. So as we look at the trajectory of the economy, I think the big question is, you know, are we only able to grow explosively through bubbles, or do we have a new engine of real growth coming up? And, you know, that's a question that has a lot of people nervous.
What do you think is the best indicator of that? Is it going to be the a turnaround in the real estate market, a definite turnaround in the job market? What would be the canary in the coal mine for that?
That's difficult to say. I think the thing about the real estate market is it has such a strong psychological effect. You know, if your home is underwater and you're facing losing your home, it's going to be real tough to justify sort of any sort of luxury purchase. And so that, you know, tends to lead people to spend really tightly, which then trickles over into the rest of the economy. And there's a theory that's getting pretty good play and seems to have some decent empirical support, is that the fallout from a housing bubble is worse than, you know, some like the fallout from like the dot-com bubble or something like that, because people's homes is so tied up in their consumer psychology.
You know, the bottom line to all of this is that economists just simply are really not going to look for job growth to pick up anytime soon. And I think that's leaving companies to just start thinking about retrenching all over again.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
You would hope that they would have the professionalism, the knowledge base to deal with these things in a better manner. And I feel that the system failed them, and the DSH policy and procedures failed these children.
That's Chuck Cox reacting to a committee review that found some holes in the DSHS process as concerns Josh Powell and the death of his two little boys. I got to tell you, one of the things that just pissed me off, I can't say it any other way, is the assistant secretary for DSHS, Children's Administration, Denise Revels Robinson, said the recommendations provided by the committee, the results of which Chuck Knox has some issues with, will, quote, be of great help in our ongoing effort to improve our practice in keeping children safe, end quote. That particular statement just raised the hackles on the back of my neck, because DSHS, contrary to what the committee found, at least in my mind, is absolutely, unequivocally culpable. They gave Josh Powell the means and the opportunity to kill his two little boys. They knew he was in the middle of the custody dispute. They knew he had been ordered to undergo an intensive psychosexual evaluation. They knew he was a suspect in his wife's disappearance. And there are so many things, and I'm not talking about the social workers, because I think the people on the street with those little kids, I think that they busted their butt to do everything for those two little boys. I'm not talking about the people who actually do the work. I'm talking about the policies, procedures, and regulations of DSHS. And there's a dead pile of bodies that lead to the door of that place down in Olympia. And somebody needs to clean that place up. That's all I'll say about that right now. Ann Bremner, Ann C.D. Bremner, represents the Cox family, joins me here on Newsline PM. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Ken. That was beautiful.
I don't know if it was beautiful. I'm just infuriated by this.
No, I just applaud you, and I read what you wrote earlier on your site, and you just it was so well stated. No one could have said it better.
Well, you represent the Cox family, and now they're going to have to resort to the possibility of a lawsuit. Where does everything stand right now in terms of what they're looking to do and how they're going to have to go about doing it?
Well, what they're looking to do is to file a notice of claim, and that'll be on Monday, which is, of course, a precursor to a suit. And you have to wait. There's a 60-day hiatus that has to be observed between the filing of a notice of claim and the filing of a lawsuit. What they're looking for is change. They've also been working on legislation to make sure this never happens again. I mean, when you think about it, just common sense dictates that if somebody is suspected in the disappearance of their wife or in her death, that they shouldn't see the kids. And then I could go on and on in terms of all the red flags that were in this case. But what Chuck and Judy want to see are policy changes, real changes, so that we don't have this pile of dead bodies like you talked about, you know, leading all the way down to Olympia. And the main thing we want to change is this focus, their stated focus, which is reunification of families at any cost, as opposed to looking out for the best interests of the child and the safety of the child. There's got to be a sea change.
So how do you accomplish that through a legal process? I mean, you can file the lawsuit, you can get a judgment, but it seems, I mean, there's been judgments that have been delivered against DSHS for decades here, and it seems it hasn't moved them off the dime yet.
No, and that's the thing, you know, and we know, Ken, I mean, it's not just anecdotally, we know in all these press accounts of like $10 million, $20 million, these huge verdicts and settlements against DSHS, going all the way back to the Eli Creekmore case, if people are, you know, old enough to remember that case, and nothing seems to change. So maybe it's not the money, maybe it is, it might make them change, but you can also come in and demand policy changes in a lawsuit and say, you've got to do something differently in the future, and maybe that's more important than money. Well, I think it is, you know, to make sure that you have... Why don't you cooperate with law enforcement? Why do you tell the cops you're going to put the kids in the house with him alone in a house with staged, you know, after ordering a psychosexual evaluation? Like you said, they gave him the means and the opportunity to kill him.
Is this within the ability of DSHS, or is this something that has got to be addressed legislatively, do you think?
I think it's both. But DSHS, they can set their own policies. They can set their own procedures. I mean, you can't just go along, as I read the file, and just have this ongoing narrative without evaluating anything. It's just kind of like today we saw Josh saw the kids. Today there was a transfer to the grandparents without any real analysis. As red flags came and went, there was just no analysis about what was at stake, what could happen. What about 400 images of incest porn on Josh's computer? You know, what about the fact he took $3.5 million of life insurance out on his wife and kids? Common sense would have told anybody.
Something was up. Well, yeah. I got to tell you, if there's a legal way of forcing change, the Coxes could not have a better attorney at the helm. I'm serious, man. I you go get him, man.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So a few moments ago, four of the Blue Angels flew in from just east of downtown and did this wrap around the Space Needle that was just phenomenal. I haven't seen him do that in a very long time. You know what? I'm going to open up the phone lines. 206-421-1000 is local. The toll-free number is 877-397-COMO. And the reason I'm doing that is because, and I'll explain to you, part of my commentary today is I got in trouble from one reader who thinks I don't like Seattle.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
So when I got in on Monday, there were already a couple of emails in. It's like people were reminded by the Seafair Parade. It's like, oh, next week is the Hydroplanes. And that means, oh, next week that's the Blue Angels. I don't like the Blue Angels. They scare my dog or my bird or my cat. They make too much noise. So there were a couple of those emails waiting for me on Monday. And then throughout the course of the week, they've dribbled in. I've probably gotten, well, I'm going to say no more than a dozen. It's in that range from people who are just, you know, I have no other way of putting it, whiny. They're whiny about the Blue Angels. They don't want them here. They don't like the noise. They don't like the traffic impact. And it's like every year these people just come out of the woodwork. And I would imagine that 99.9% of us who live in this region are in love with the Blue Angels. We love what they do. We love watching them. We love the noise. As I was mentioning about 10 minutes ago, four of the Angels came in from on a curve east of downtown and wrapped around the Space Needle. It was an awesome sight. And it was noisy, and everybody on the street below was sitting there looking up in awe. I didn't see anybody holding their hands to their ears because of the roar of the jet engines. But what I'd like to, and here's what I'd like to do. I want to hear from you, and if you don't like the Blue Angels, I do want you to call. I promise I will try to be patient. The number is 206-421-1000. That's the local. The toll-free number for you is 877-397-COMO. That's 877-397-5666. Here's the question. Keep the Blue Angels or send them packing? Simple. Do you like them or do you hate them? Do you want to keep them or do you want them to go? Because I can't believe the tradition that we have in this area, the ties that we have, you know, ever since 1972. That's how long the Blue Angels have been flying at Seafair since 1972, and there was that one, I think, one-year period where we didn't get them because of there was problems with the federal government or something, and there was money and whatever. And I can't believe that for that duration of time that they have been playing to an angry audience. And I got this email. I had read it earlier. I won't read the whole thing again. Let me see if I can find it. Here it goes. It's to whom I'm concerned. I'm a very offended Seattleite, he writes. I'm assuming it's a he because it's just signed R. So I don't know if that's Roberta or Robert. I'm a very offended Seattleite. I'm concerned about how Como News' own Ken Schramm addressed the public on his article that was posted 8/3/12. He's unprofessional, sarcastic, demeaning, and rude tone. Come on, if you know me at all, you know I'm sarcastic and sometimes demeaning and quite frequently rude. Okay. I don't know about unprofessional. I guess I'll have to give that to him. That's his opinion. Is no way to handle complaints to the general public. I think Seattleites are tired of Ken Schramm, and he is raging mad about people whining. In my commentary, I use the word whining. Part of my commentary addresses this whole issue of the people who are upset with the Blue Angels. So that's what kicked this into gear today, all right? So that's the question that's on the table, 206-421-1000, 877-397-COMO. And we're going to get to Darren in Shoreline. You're up on Newsline PM. Nah, Darren's not there. Okay, Darren. We'll try Robin in Seattle. You're up on Newsline PM.
Hello?
Hi there, Robin.
Hi there. First of all, people who don't like the Blue Angels or Seafair, it's the same time every year, need to plan a vacation somewhere else. I have lived in Seattle area for 60 years, and it's just part of it. And, you know, people got to have real stuff to complain about.
Yeah, they can go to Twisp for the weekend or something.
You know, wherever. But this is Seattle, for crying out loud.
I'm with you, Robin. I'm putting your vote down as loves the Angels, all right?
And by the way, I don't find you sarcastic and rude. I find you really appropriate to people who are idiots. Well,
thank you very much, Robin. I appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
All right, 206-421-1000 if you want in on this. Brian out there, stuck on I-90, he says. You're up, Brian.
How you doing, Ken?
All right, sir.
It is completely worth it to wait on I-90 to see the Blue Angels. I'm stuck in traffic, and I don't care.
So are you, like, on the bridge?
I am on the bridge right now.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, that, in my opinion, is, like, one of the prime spots to watch the Angels do their routine.
Well, when they were doing the routine, I was stuck by Island Crest, so I didn't get to see them. But whenever I hear them, I turn into a little kid. That's part of summer.
I'm agreeing with you. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the call. 206-421-1000. Rose out there in U Village, you're up on Newsline PM. Love them or hate them?
Well, I do love them, but I can only think of a couple of reasons why some people might not. And I have a German Shepherd that's 10 years old, and this is the first year I think the noise has bothered her, along with the fireworks. And the other reason I guess people might be fearful is if there was ever a crash. But those are the only two reasons I can think, because, I mean, I'm like the guy before you. I'm like a little kid, and I just would go any place and watch him. So,
you know what? And we had a dog once that used to get very nervous over the 4th of July with all the fireworks and such. And
yeah.
You know what we did? We went to the vet and got a little mild tranquilizer.
Well, that's what I got for her this year. I gave her half a dose and she went to sleep.
Yeah, see, that's takes care of the problem. Thanks, Rose. I appreciate the call.
Maybe the first people could take a little Valium and make it better. Yeah.
I like that idea a lot. Give them the Valium and let them deal with it that way. Jay in Seattle, you're up on Newsline PM. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Ken.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to call and say, I mean, talking about people that are whining about the Blue Angels, I'm not whining, but I'm not a fan. I mean, they are pretty cool and everything, but if you live anywhere close to where the noise bothers you, and if you have a pet, it does kind of suck.
Why? There's ways of dealing with it with the pet. I just mentioned, you know, if you have a dog or a cat, get a mild tranquilizer. Sometimes, you know, I have a parrot that used to get upset with the fireworks, and I would put the parrot in a quiet, dark bedroom with music playing that masked the sounds.
And well, not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's
if you have a job where you work at night, too, and you sleep in during the day, and then the Blue Angels wake you up every year, it's kind of...
Yeah,
but then
you're going to, you know, it's the kids out there playing, honey. They woke me up. Get them off the lawn. I mean, there's always going to be something that's, you know, but come on, you got to roll with it a little bit, don't you think, Jay?
I don't hate it, but I guess it's kind of one of those things, like, you get over it after a while. I mean, I've seen it, it's cool, but it doesn't impress me or anything.
But you don't want them to, you're not screaming for them to go away, are you?
No, I'm not going that far.
All right.
I'm just saying there, you know.
You're just a mild.
What it is.
You're just a mild whiner.
You got it.
All right, thanks, Jay.
All right.
Look, here. The bottom line to this is, and I apologize for not being able to get to the rest of you who are on hold right now. I wish I could, but the bottom line to this is that there's lots of things in everyone's life that, you know, there are things that we find irritating. That we have to put up with. That shouldn't be one of them. The sound of that is phenomenal. It's once a year. And you know what? You got 99.9% of the people in this region who disagree with you.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Are orca whales endangered? Do they deserve to be endangered? Are they a subspecies that does not deserve protection from the federal government because they are endangered? These are all questions that are going to be raised by some property rights advocates and some farmers, I think, down in California, who want the government to take the orcas off the Endangered Species Act. And the point that they're trying to drive home is that the orca is not a subspecies. That the contention here is that basically the government invented a subspecies. Daniel Heimbaugh is the attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation who's put this petition together. Joins me here this afternoon on Newsline PM. How are you, Daniel?
Doing fine. Nice to talk to you this beautiful Friday afternoon.
Good to have you here. Thank you very much. So, what has put you on this path here? Is it something that the property rights owners and advocates have in mind that they're being cheated out of? Do farmers feel that they're being endangered by these, or they're being endangered by the orcas being listed as endangered, or what?
Well, yeah, let me put it in context for you. First, I think we should be really specific about what exactly, you know, the petitioners are asking here. What we filed yesterday was a petition with NOAA Fisheries to revisit whether or not the southern resident distinct population segment of orca whales is legally listable under the Endangered Species Act. And the reason is because a number of farming operations, specifically in the San Joaquin Valley down in California, have been suffering drastic water cutbacks for a few years now as a result of a document called a biological opinion, which was developed by the federal government and which said that we have to have water cutbacks in the valley in order to benefit the orca. Now, if the orca is not listed under the Endangered Species Act, then the biological opinion wouldn't cover it, and therefore that would be one step toward trying to get these farmers some relief.
Okay, so the motive then behind this is that the restrictive water regulations are impacting their ability to do whatever farming they do, and if they can get the orca taken off the endangered species list, they'll have a better chance of getting the water they need.
Well, yeah, that's essentially
that
right. Yeah, that's essentially right. And I should emphasize, and the petition points this out, I'm sure a number of your listeners have heard about the water crisis in California that's been going on for a while. And one of the main causes of it is, you know, this biological opinion, which is based on impacts of water cutbacks to endangered species. So the point is, we have to make sure that the species that are being ostensibly being benefited by the water cutbacks are indeed legally entitled to ESA protection. That's the thrust of the petition.
And so you're saying that the orca whale is a subspecies and not entitled to the same protections that an endangered species comes with?
Well, there's two grounds for delisting that we raise in our petition. One of them is kind of a technical legal issue, which is, you know, whether the Endangered Species Act allows the federal government to list a DPS, a distinct population segment of a subspecies, because that's what the government's done here, and we argue that that's illegal under the act.
Hasn't that already been tossed out by the Ninth Circuit? If I read correctly somewhere, this has been through the courts before, and you've already lost that argument.
Well, the act itself is crystal clear in the text, and I think the case you're referring to is actually an unpublished decision, which means it's not precedential.
Okay.
So the issue is a live one, and we think that it's a very important one that needs to be addressed.
So you want to kill the whales?
Well, I knew that question was coming.
You want to kill the whales?
No, that's not true. One thing that people shouldn't be confused about is that if the orcas are delisted from the Endangered Species Act, there are still a lot of regulations in place which protect them. For instance, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is a federal law which would protect them from take, which is interference or harm. There are also a number of federal and state boating regulations. Washington State has regulations which dictate how close vessels can get to whales.
But it wouldn't preserve the water issue, or it wouldn't preserve the water, which is the issue with the property rights advocates and the farmers.
Well, see, and that's exactly what's triggered through the Endangered Species Act listing. It's the consultation process which leads to the production of the biological opinion, which leads to the water cutbacks.
Well, we'll be keeping our eye on this because we don't like lawyers from California messing with our orca whales, you know.
Well, I should tell you, I'm local.
Oh, okay.
I work up here in the Northwest.
Well, then you should know better.
And one point about that biological opinion that people also should be aware of is, that last year, a federal judge found that the determination that the water cutbacks would jeopardize the orca was arbitrary and capricious and unlawful.
All right.
And they've remanded that back to the agency.
Daniel Heimbaugh, attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, has put this petition together. Thank you for your time, Daniel. It was good talking with you.
Thanks, Ken.
All right.